Do you see its oceans? Apsalar asked. What? He turned. Its oceans. Growlin Sea. That's the big one. The Lord of the Deep Waters living there is named Growlin. He tends vast, beautiful underwater gardens. Growlin will come down to us, one day, to our world. And he'll gather his chosen and take them to his world. And we'll live in those gardens, warmed by the deep fires, and our children will swim like dolphins. And we'll be happy since there won't be any more wars, and no empires, and no swords and shields. Oh, Crocus, it'll be wonderful, won't it? Hello, and welcome to 10 Very Big Books, a Malazan read-through podcast. This week, we're talking about Gardens of the Moon, Book 6, The City of Blue Fire. My name's Peter Bond. I've read each book in the main series, however, my two co-hosts have not. With me today is my friend and closest confidant, India Jones.
Hi, everyone.
And the eel of this particular podcast, Joshua Dean Baker.
That's right. I'm slippery. If you touch me, bit of a shock.
Bit of a shock.
Take two.
Take two. I got nothing. Someone got a good opening and we can talk about it.
I do. Wait, well, Peter, were you going to let us know why you said that quote?
Well, we can talk about it later if you want. I think that's a better choice. So
okay, let's give a quick pause as if any of us comes up with an opener.
All right, we'll take a few seconds, then one of you will say something good that isn't me.
I got it. I don't know. Do you got it, Josh?
No.
All right. Okay. All right. This book has let me down again. This chapter, what is this, book five, six?
Book six.
Awful. Real boring. Horrifying. I didn't even want to read it. I'm sorry. I know I'm coming on strong today, but literally, I was going to text you guys, and I was saving this conversation for today because I just have thoughts.
India, I know you have so many thoughts, but I just feel like every time you're like, news, I still don't like it.
No, but last week I did like it.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, wow, like, that's really picking up. I'm really getting it. And then this week happened, and like, 17 wasn't bad.
You were less in the pocket. You were less in the pocket.
No, there was no pocket. It was just words everywhere.
Well,
I guess that is a book.
That is a book. All right. Well, hopefully we can try and clear up some of that.
Let's hope.
All right, let's get into it. Chapter 17. In the walls of Darujistan, Ralak Naam speaks with Circle Breaker. Darujistan's enigmatic puppet master, the Eel, supports Cole. However, the Councilman Turban Orr has contracted the Assassin's Guild to kill Cole. Ralak's mentor, Ocelot, is the one to do the killing. Anamander Rake speaks with Baruch about the despair of the Tisti Andi, the last of their race in this world, a diaspora without purpose, resting in immortal ennui. The Tisti Andi of Moonspawn follow his command in battling the Malazan, a noble cause in his view. Baruch shows him the sleeping body of Mammoth. Uncle Mammoth is a high priest of Drek and uses his warren to try and find the barrow of the Jagat Tyrant. He will not wake until the tyrant does as well, if he is not enslaved first. The spy Circle Breaker worries about his cover in the city and sees Mies, one of the regulars at the Phoenix Inn. Crocus takes Apsalar to his uncle's estate, but Mammoth is gone. Mies finds them instead. She shares that Crocus is a wanted man in the city for his killing of the guard at the Da'aril estate. Crocus curses Chalice and they head to the Phoenix Inn. The Tisti Andi Sirat skulked behind Crocus and Apsalar, wanting to kill the coin bearer. Ralak covers himself in a rust-colored powder to deaden magic, then heads towards Kroll's belfry to hunt down Ocelot. Man, I did pretty good. You know,
Oh my gosh!
I know it was a shorter one. It was one of the you know.
I'm impressed.
Yeah, that was really good.
You're getting so good at your words, buddy.
Thank you.
I have to say, though, this little, what do you call it, summary? This summary, it used a lot of big words, you know?
Yeah, Peter Bond is getting his rocks off writing diaspora and ennui in the same goddamn sentence.
I was like, wow.
All right.
And then I tooted my own horn for even knowing what it meant.
Oh, God. It's just they were good words to describe it, so.
So I just took them out of my verbal arsenal.
Oh my god.
No, I really liked it.
Yeah, it was nice.
Thanks.
That was. I know that came off as like not a compliment, but it really was. I swear, when you really dig in,
If she hadn't started, I was gonna start it as a roast. So yeah.
Alrighty. So India, we're back in the city of Darujistan, and one of the first people we catch up with is Ralak Nam, and we get an insight more into, first we saw kind of what the Assassin's Guild was up to, but now we tune into him and how it's interacting with the city council.
Yeah.
What did you think about this contract to kill Cole and his pursuit of his mentor Ocelot?
Okay. So first of all, I had no idea that that's the conversation was that the Something's Guild?
The Assassin's Guild.
Yeah, I didn't know that. And which makes sense now. I also didn't know that Ocelot was his mentor, which makes that whole killing thing a whole lot more sad. Which I was, during it, I was just like, why? But now.
There's like two scenes with them. It's a kind of, I don't know.
I didn't realize it. They didn't seem like friends, but all right. Anyway, why do they want to kill Cole? Just because, like, I don't get it. Why can't they just let him, like, live his I'm technically dead life anyway?
Josh, do you have a good idea on why Turban Or may want Cole dead?
I mean, my only guess is maybe he's kind of, I think it's maybe even said that he's heard about their plan to kind of use Cole to kind of like undermine Turban Or's power and kind of present a big problem to him, and he's just trying to head it off at the source. I think he knows what their plan is, and he's just trying to prevent it.
Whose plan is that?
That's the Ralak and Murmilio and
Murillo.
Murillo and Kruppa.
Kruppa. Yeah, I agree. And from what I understood, it does have to do with their kind of more recent plan in the life of technically dead Cole. To bring him to technically life and return him to his noble power.
Yeah, because it kind of sounds like Turban Or's power rests on the fact that Cole was dead, and if he isn't dead, then his claim to like nobility pretty hurt, or at least his like claim to be the main power of the nobility in his like coalition or whatever starts falling apart.
I actually don't know that. I think Turban Or may be a nobleman outside of it. I think Lady Simtal's power is more derived from it, and he's
backing her. That's I'm right. Yeah. I was wrong. You're right. Yes, okay. India, your hand is raised.
Yes. All right. I was under the impression you that nobody liked Cole class. Anymore. What'd you say?
You in the back of the class.
Yeah.
You were saying, sorry.
No, I don't know.
Fuck you.
Peter.
Oh, Peter.
I don't...
You said something about Cole.
Yeah, it was Cole. Oh, yes. Okay. I thought that everyone didn't like him, though. But, I mean, I guess they didn't not like him. I don't know.
Well, most people do, but this kind of gang, this entourage at the Phoenix Inn are fans of Cole.
Yeah, but aren't they all like thieves and poor people?
Wow, yes. And thieves and poor people don't fucking matter.
They don't matter, but they seem
typical bourgeoisie India.
They are the riffraff compared to the
city
council.
They're not the high nobility.
Yeah. Josh, we have a prolonged scene with Anamander Rake when he speaks a lot about the Tisty Andy. You know, we're learning more and more about this, the inhabitants of Moonspawn. What do you think? Are you going to try and move on up into Moonspawn any day now?
Is that a cue to sing the song? I'm ready.
No, I was
moving
just...
Moving on up!
Oh, no.
To the Moonspawn! It's a good-ass song. Anyway, so this scene was like... I think this scene was one of my top three scenes of the entire book so far.
I do love the scene.
Because, like, Anamander Rake has been several things so far. He's been a badass capable of murdering an entire cabal of high mages. He's been a god facing another god down on a field and kind of being like, I wish you would, you know? and now he's like, but also, I'm real fucking sad all the time. All of time. And I was like, I did not see that side of him existing. And then him putting forth that, like, all of the Tisty Andy are kind of like, you know, in this state. It was very interesting.
I fully agree. And it's something I really love about when you learn. And it like makes so much sense, you know, since they're so old, you know, you think about this ancient race. And it's like, of course, if you were in that moon forever in this alien world, it's like instantly you're like, oh, yes, of course, they feel without purpose and adrift.
Oh, what's any and like. and just the sheer boredom. Like, he, yeah. like, at one point he's like, oh, I wouldn't have expected you to read this. And he was like, I've been alive a very long time. I've had a lot of time to read.
Yeah.
That is how the guy who reads the audiobook says it, too. Very monotone.
Oh.
You hit that spot on.
Thank you. I try.
India, what did you think of this insight into the Tisty Andy?
I don't know. I guess, like, you don't think about it, but when you do think about it, it is common sense. Like, yeah, obviously, it sucks. But also, I don't know, like, don't they kind of suck? So, I mean, you did it to yourselves.
Why do you think they suck? Hot take.
Well, not that they suck, but, like, it sucks, that situation. But also, like, you did it to yourself. You didn't have to live this way. You chose to live this way.
Yeah,
I suppose. Why do we feel bad?
I guess you do not feel bad, it seems.
I don't. I really like the character. He's, like, super cool, but, like, he's also, you know, he does some lit things, so it's not all bad.
I see. You're telling him to look on the silver lining.
Yeah, exactly. And also, just you mentioned in the summary, which I didn't get, which is not a surprise, the uncle of the boy.
Yeah.
He's the one that's sleeping at the house. Yeah.
But he's like, it's like when Quick Ben went into the, you know, there's a scene where, like, Quick Ben went into the Shadow Warren and Kalam is, like, looking at his unconscious body.
Yeah.
It's a similar thing, like, Uncle Mammoth is unconscious because his, like, you know, he's in the Warrens, so he's, like, but his physical body's...
He's astral projecting.
Sure, yeah.
Okay.
Wait,
not done. How funny is it that they were eating flatbreads?
Really good. Daru flatbread.
I thought it was so funny.
What?
Just gabbing over a little snack, you know.
It's like pizza. It's like Peter when we had the pizza that was on, like, the flatbread. That's all I could think about was them just, like, talking over a pizza.
Talking about their immortal despair. Yeah.
I didn't see that. Although, India, I got bad news.
What?
I just flipped to a random page trying to find the flatbread and did immediately see more names that we've not met yet.
This whole book, I was, like, messaging in the group chat. Have we met this person? Have we met this person? I don't remember.
Oh,
this
I
person.
Had to go. I had to, that dramatis person. You gotta have the book or, like, a picture of the dramatis personae with you at all times, because there were a lot of names this time also that I was like, I don't fucking know who you are.
Right? Like, but the audiobook doesn't have that. I guess I gotta carry the physical book but listen to the audiobook.
Hmm. Yeah.
But that was I wouldn't say that was top three. I mean, no scene is top three scenes, but. I mean, yeah, but what was, I don't know, what was the point? Was it just a little, to make him a little bit more dynamic?
Just learning more about them and why they're involved in this conflict with the Malazan.
Do you feel like they're going to probably be in the second book a lot?
Josh, what do you think?
Who?
The Tisty Andy.
Yes.
I have a feeling as well.
Well, because, like, they've got a fucking moon base. Why would they not, like...
Why even bring it up?
Yeah, why, like, they're gonna fucking leave at some point or some bullshit.
I feel that way as well. They're setting us up. They're setting us up for something with that, with this whole book six.
Yeah.
It's called Gardens of the Moon, and we had, like, it's good. There's gonna be some shit where, like, we go on that moon, or that moon becomes insanely important. Maybe the moon crashes. Oh, shit.
Wait,
maybe
Peter, is that why?
Crashes, takes out Daruja Stan. Yes, yes, it is, India.
We'll talk. The passage is at the
end. Whoa, Peter. Mind blown.
Let's talk about it in chapter 19.
Let's talk about it 19. Then. Why would you even read it? You completely got me. Oh, my God. Wow. And I called this stupid. Go ahead.
All righty. India. We see Crocus and Absalar together, and there it's like we see them as a pair throughout this whole book. And in this chapter, they're in Uncle Mammoth's estate and then head towards the Phoenix Inn.
Mm.
And Crocus learns that Chalice kind of snitched on him, and the city is looking for him after the murder of the guard. How'd you feel now that they're in the city together? And, you know, it's kind of they're kind of a pair now.
I'm going to get to that, but I just need to first say I thought her name was Absala because the guy's a British accent, but it's Absalar. That's funny. Secondly, I believe it's Chalice.
Oh, is that true?
Yeah.
I mean, it is a double L. I've just always said it Chalice.
Yeah,
so.
Because that's how the guy says it. So I just don't want to, I don't know.
Yeah, it's true. Anyway, so.
Yeah, I forgot the question.
Pronunciation nation aside.
What do I think about what? I don't know.
Are you on your phone, Inge? Are you?
No. What was the question?
I was just asking about the two of them being back in the city.
Wait, I don't understand. So they're only looking for him because they think that he killed that person that Sari killed?
Exactly, yeah.
And have we actually heard, like, firsthand, like, do we know for certain that she ratted him out? Like, we just hear this randomly from Mies, a person we have very little reason to believe. Like, I thought it was, it almost seemed to me like an excuse to get Crocus to go with them because Baruch wants him protected, right? Or someone wants him protected?
Well, love Mies.
Mies is cool. Baruch definitely wants him protected.
I'm going to go on the record. Mies could die on the first page of the next chapter, and I wouldn't fucking care.
Damn.
I mean, listen, I do hear you. It's not like she's the primary characters of the story, but still.
But also, let's talk about the fact that they put a picture of Mies on the PowerPoint we use, and it is not a picture. It is not the image I had for her. Peter's popping over real quick to look.
I want
to
look,
I did not, but I'll take your word for it.
Yeah. I thought Mies... What do you expect Mies to look like, India?
Fat.
Okay, and... well, you're doing better than I was.
Yeah.
Would you say old or young?
Old.
What the... I missed some integral...
I'm with India. That's basically how I think of
the character. I definitely imagine Mies as, like, for one... I guess, I don't know. I thought she was, like, young and... Apparently, I was just very wrong.
I mean,
I suppose so.
Yeah.
She's just your standard bar wench, you know?
Yeah, I guess India knows bar wenches far better than I do.
Yeah, I mean, just gotta watch Shrek. But
damn,
all right,
damn.
No, yeah. Sorry, sidetracked.
Anything else we gotta say about this chapter?
No,
I mean, it's pretty short.
Happens.
Next chapter.
That's what I said.
Sarak's skulking. What the fuck ever. Ralik's gonna put that magic dust on him and, I don't know, not be able to get boners or something. Like,
side effects. Alrighty, here we go. Moving on. Chapter 18. The bridge burners are laying low in the city. Quick Ben can't find Sari. Fiddler and Whiskey Jack discuss how to think of other soldiers. Cole and Perrin enter Daruja's stand. Cole's wounds are worse, and he requests to be taken to the Phoenix Inn. Ralik enters Kroll's belfry and battles with the invisible Ocelot. The Odaterol dust stops the magic arrow. Ralik kills Ocelot, but not before taking a few wounds himself. The Tisty Andy Sarah wakes up, disoriented. Somebody had disarmed her, and she retreats through her warren. Mies and Arelta speak with Crocus and Absalar in the attic of the Phoenix Inn. They have heard Cole has entered the city and is headed towards them. They both seem to be agents of the Eel, with orders to protect Crocus and Absalar. Perrin sits in the Phoenix Inn, reflecting on his bad luck with Tattersail, Tok, and Cole. He thinks about the ways gods manipulate mortals. Then, Kalam finds him in the Phoenix Inn. They call upon the squad's healer, Mallet. They head upstairs, and Mallet starts to work on Cole's injuries. Perrin is glad to see Whiskey Jack. They speak more about the adjunct Lorne and the bridge burners being set up to fail. Using an ancient artifact, they reach out to Dujek. The High Fist speaks of the Imperial politics. Lassine plans to dismantle the Second Army, sending different pieces to seven cities to quell the growing rebellion. However, Dujek does not feel the situation on Genabacus is stable, with Nathalog and Genabaris on the rise, as well as the Holy Army in the south, following the Peninian Seer. The High Mage Taishren opposes the Bridge Burners as well, inquiring all about on the continent. Dujek says that they must leave the mage alone for now, but to pursue the adjunct Lorne. Whiskey Jack tells Perrin to wait until the Jagged Tyrant has awakened and been brought to the city by Lorne. Then they will decide what to do with her. Inside Amtos Falak, the adjunct Lorne and Tool find the thinnest for the Tyrant, an acorn, holding much of the Jagged Tyrant's power. We're catching up with the bridge burners. We see Quick Ben kind of give
AJ,
up. I'm sorry.
AJ, can you put it real quick? The boys are back in town, like when he says bridge burners, just real quick.
I'll do this. The boys are back in town. We're catching up with the bridge burners. Whiskey Jack and Fiddler are talking. Josh, what did you think of this section? Another kind of scene where we're just seeing the squad hang out.
So I've got two thoughts, very different. Thought number one, love my scenes with the boys. Love just the boys, you know, Saturdays, you know, it's for them. Love it. Thought number two, and this is something that Indy and I have both expressed. I don't fucking know any of their names.
Yeah, and listen, I hate to tell you, I also feel that way sometimes.
Like, I felt okay that Mallet or Fiddler was the healer. I did not know which one. I know that there is... You've said all of the names except one right now, and I could not, gun to my head, could not tell you what the other one's name is. Yeah. There's like a second explosives person.
Kalam.
Yeah. Nope. Kalam's the X-Claw. We got my boy Quick Man, but there's just another fucking one-word name person, I think. So, you're looking it up real quick?
I can yeah. You ready?
Yes.
I got them all.
Okay, give me the first letter of the... We got Trots, the big boy.
You got Trots.
I don't know who that is.
He's the big boy.
He's the Bargast.
No.
Bargast are big boys.
All right. You got Hedge and Fiddler.
Hedge
They're both
is the explosive. Yeah, the other explosive person.
Yep. Of course, Whiskey Jack's the sergeant.
Yes.
And Kalam's the X-Claw.
Yes.
Quick Ben is the mage.
Got it.
All these basic stuff. And then I think you're really talking more about the secondary bridge burners who get lost in the mix,
yes.
You know.
Yeah,
I hate them.
Hedge, Mallet, and Trots are definitely on the lower rung
for
of the main
sure,
squad.
For sure.
And
but
I'd
anyway,
like them to stay there.
Yeah, okay. Shots fired. no, I felt like can I roll this into the next bridge burner scene? Can we just
do whatever you want. Hit
right,
me up.
All right. So, I like the first scene. It's nothing crazy's happening, you know, but we're seeing them, and as I said, I forgot their names. We see them again, and again, the thing that's really cool and also I hate is that the fucking bridge burners, when I'm reading this book, it's kind of like I was reading a Marvel book. I was reading a comic book for Marvel, and the Avengers showed up, right? And they were characters in the story, and it was alluded to that there's a whole universe of Avengers lore, but I don't get to fucking read it. I don't get to know the cool shit Captain America did. I just have to know Captain America's cool as shit. And that is how I feel when I read about the bridge burners.
Mm.
That's a good thing that you say there.
Thank you. And they get to... Shut up. So, like, fucking Whiskey Jack's just like, you know, back in the day, the boys had these, and pulls out a goddamn skeleton arm. And it's a magical two-way fucking radio that can go across the continent. And it's like at any other point. We are six books deep, and I would have loved to known that we got this kind of shit going on.
It was a skeleton
and also,
arm.
Also, yeah, there's a skeleton arm. He pulls it out and he uses it to talk with Dujek. And also, it's everyone else in the room with him is like, oh shit, he got a skeleton arm. It talked. Like, everyone else is confused too. So like, I don't know. The dynamic of the bridge murders always confuses the hell out of me. And I guess it's because there were like 4,000 of them and now there's 8.
Yeah,
I guess that's what's the weird
I
thing.
I think less than 30, but... Well, the good news is you do learn more about the Bridge Burners' history, but I can certainly understand wanting to know more about it.
Yeah, I do, and then they talk with Dujek, and I feel like I have a 60% grasp of what this means.
About the kind of Imperial politics info dump.
60% max. And I think, honestly, I need to read it again before I feel more comfortable.
I mean, there is a huge download of what's going on outside of the city of Darujistan.
Yeah.
Was that when he's like, I know what you're trying to do, and this is it? Or no?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Wait, what are you...
Well, when Perrin, is that who it is?
Mm-hmm.
He's like...
Perrin's with Whiskey Jack. Whiskey Jack pulls out the bone,
yeah,
the bone phone.
Yeah, yeah.
And is like...
Talking to the guy.
Yeah, and they talk all about like what Lassine wants and what Tayshan wants and what's Dujek doing. So, Josh, what are you confused about in regard to Imperial politics?
Okay. I'm still, I suppose, struggling to understand the scope of the world, if that makes sense, like the size of it. So like, I know we're on a continent and I've seen a map now. I understand there's a few large continents and oceans in between, but like, I'm struggling to understand the size and power of the Malazan Empire and how easily it could get its armies to this current continent with any sort of like reasonable time frame, you know, logistics of that. And then I'm also starting to understand that we have seen one part of Genabacus, And there's a whole goddamned other part that I guess we haven't seen. Yeah. And we haven't super talked about that much. And I guess I had not realized, like, how much more of things there were. Also, I am looking at a map, and is the Seven Cities continent just America?
No.
Okay.
Anyway, I guess that's what my issue was. And also, I know that I'm not going to get to fucking know about the Pinoyan seer, because it's too late in the game for that to be relevant. But, like, I imagine in future things it will be, and I'll be confused then.
Yeah. India, how much of the imperial politics landed for you? It seems like Josh caught some of it. I mean, I would say, you know, it's a big mix of information.
Yeah.
So
no, nothing. Not at all. I didn't even realize any of that was relevant. So, like, I mean, I knew it was relevant to the story, but, like, there are things that you need to, like, pay attention to, and then things that you're just kind of like, all right, well, I didn't catch that, but let's keep it pushing. And that was one of those moments, but I'm still confused about, like, it's not so much the geography, which I guess is because I didn't realize, that just never even occurred to be something that I should think about, but now I guess I will. But, like, everybody's place in this whole war, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Because weren't they also saying that, like, they're losing, like, the Malazan people are, like, losing grip of some places, and now they have to worry about that? Or no?
Yeah, they're talking about the Seven Cities, which is another continent.
Oh, America.
It's the continent.
Yes.
I don't know. It's the continent that both Kalam and Quickben are from.
Are they both black or just one?
They're both. Yeah.
And question. So, and then the Malazan Empire is originates from a third continent of which we know almost nothing.
They originate kind of from a smaller place, like kind of an archipelago.
Yeah, I'm looking at it. Okay. Okay,
all right.
I think I kind of get
But there's,
it.
Like, a larger mainland next to it, but, like, the empire specifically is from.
Oh, I see. Oh, it's that tiny-ass island. Oh, okay.
We may or may not need to cut this, but because I don't know if it's in this chapter or the next one, but, Lassine, why doesn't she care if anyone, any relevant character in this story, why does she not care if they die?
What do you mean?
Because, like, we found out in the last book that she's like, all right, well, Lauren's probably going to die. And then we found out now that she's like, all right, well, all these guys are probably going to die. And it's like, fine. Like, she wants to, like, why does she want, did she always want to kill the bridge burners?
Yeah, well, you know, since the Siege of Pale, it's clear that someone in the Imperial Capital opposes the bridge burners.
Well, I mean, isn't she, like, essentially the capital? So she's not just someone. How do they not know that? Well, I guess they do now.
Lassine definitely opposed the bridge burners and Dujek. And in some way, you know, Dujek served with the old emperor. So did Whiskey Jack. You know, there are imperial forces that have a lot of loyalty and a lot of followers that are too, you know, much of the army, like, serves Dujek, not the Empress. Do you know what I mean? So he is an opponent to her in that way. You know, they're political adversaries. Whilst they still fight under the Malazan Empire, they don't actually, you know, she's trying to consolidate her own power as the new Empress.
She's obnoxious.
Hmm.
All right, fine. But there's
all right. We've had a lot of imperial politics talk here.
Yeah, it's making my head hurt.
Same.
India, in this section, we see Crooks and Absalar up in the attic, and we hear Mies and Arelta talking about trying to protect them. And they seem to be working for the eel. What do you think of these two as they kind of step more onto the stage in the later parts of the book?
I love them. I love them so much. I imagine Mies is just, like, just a loving woman who will just feed you and make, and just, you know, she just seems like a good lady. Really,
she's
like
a
her.
Good nut.
Yeah, I really enjoy her, and I like the way that she's voiced in my audiobook. But she, what do I think about them? I don't know. Josh, you said that you don't know if they're, like, good, like.
I understand that they're working for the eel. I just refuse to believe that the what they told Crocus to get him to come with them is true.
Mm.
Not that I believe that there's inherently bad intentions, but I just think that they're lying to get him to do what they want him to do.
Do you not think Crocus is wanted?
No,
by the city
I do
guard?
Not believe so.
Oh, okay. Well. I didn't really think of that. I, you know, maybe call me naive. I just, I trust him.
All right. You're naive.
Throwing bones.
Whoa. With that said, now that you've mentioned the eel, I'm going to need you to dive deep, deep, deep dive into
Josh. Much like an eel face. Josh's got an eel face.
Is there multiple or is he just one guy?
Oh,
or girl. Is he invisible?
The eel is whatever the eel needs to be. It's the voice of the city. It's the needs and wants of the city. I'm just making
shit up.
Where'd
you read that?
I'm just making shit up. We don't know shit about the eel, except that it's probably one person who's really fucking smart and is attempting to do something.
But the mysterious puppet master behind Daruja Stan.
Or the eel is many people. Who goddamn knows, you know?
That's the question. It's pissing me off.
Or is the eel... I mean, it's hinted at who the eel could be in the third chapter.
Yeah, but I didn't get it. That was over my head totally. Someone
we'll
small,
there.
Round.
Before we pivot there, we see Adjunct Lorne with the acorn thinnest. How'd that land for the two of you?
Really great symbolism. Indy, I think you picked up on it, right?
No. I was like, what? When they said it's an acorn, I was like, oh, cool, acorn.
Yeah, I had no idea why either.
Wait,
maybe because...
God.
Yeah, no, it'll grow into a mighty oak or some bullshit.
Alrighty. Well, let's talk. We can just...
Wait, no, Peter, why don't you... Can you dive into the acorn?
Do we know shit about the acorn, Peter? What's a finnet? Finnest.
Finnest?
You dripping in it?
Took me a second.
Oh, that's a no for AJ.
I'm terrible.
That was good.
AJ did not approve.
The finnest is like a, you know... It's like a phylactery for a lich or something.
Sick, got
you know?
It.
You know, it's like it's a bastion of power. It's the Jagat tyrant, you know, so.
Yeah, you got it. Okay.
Well, I mean, you read that in your summary, Peter. I was looking for a deeper meaning.
Yeah, well, I used the lich metaphor, which I knew may not land for you. Yeah.
The lich? Is that like from Dr. Seuss?
It's like its power source in a way, you know? It's not all, its real power source, but some of its power is there, and it'll grow into it.
It's like a Horcrux.
Oh, that's a great example. It's like a Horcrux.
I swear to God, have you not seen or read Harry Potter,
India? I have. I'm just trying to conceptualize it.
All right, we're moving on. Chapter 19.
Yeah, 19. Here we come.
Beep, beep, all right.
Woo! All righty. Oh, wait.
Did we completely skip over the whole Ralik ocelot thing?
I've got it.
Ralik's dusty, and it's definitely not going to have any repercussions. Thank you, next.
Yeah, so yes, India, we did skip over the Ralik and ocelot fight.
Because
any
that's how insignificant it was.
Any thoughts about the assassins dueling?
Yeah, it was weak sauce.
Wait,
but
written,
are we ever going to find out what the red dust is? Sorry.
Yeah, it's that dust that's on the Ota roll that the adjunct uses. So this motherfucker's definitely getting some superpowers like she is, but he's also definitely going to become immune to, like, healing magic or some bullshit.
I need to understand further.
Ooh. Magic is magnets, and he put anti-magnet dust on his body.
Oh!
Yeah.
Did that work, please?
Like the dust, no, like the, you know how both Perrin and Lorne have Otatero blades, which null magic.
Wait, Perrin does too?
Yeah, his blade was.
We don't know that.
I'm pretty sure it is.
Opon.
Oh, Chance, we do not know that Chance is an Otatero sword. That would be a huge deal.
I'm pretty sure it is an Otatero sword, because that's what helps him kill the Hound of Shadow.
I thought he was touched by luck, or some bullshit.
Let me check the internet.
That's Peter's, I think I'm wrong, voice.
I think I could be wrong.
Did you goof?
Well, no one, none of you look it up. That's always
a
recipe.
I'm not looking anything up. Yeah, so I mean, Andy, I guess it's like, for whatever reason, there's that one material that can be infused with weapons. I guess it's a metal, and it is anti-magic for whatever reason. And so he was gifted some of it by the guild leader. Yeah, by Baruch. Yeah, you're right. By Baruch. And he was like, I think the idea was with that powder, what that he could do is like coat something in it, coat his armor in it, like a weapon or armor, or like throw it at something. And that's the safe way to use it and like nullify one magic thing. But like if you rub it on your skin like he did, theoretically you would become immune to magic. But like I think depending on the person, there's probably serious side effects. Like maybe sometimes it's advantageous and sometimes like your brain, or your fingernails melt off. Who knows?
Wow, turns out, as normal, I was wrong.
Fuck yeah.
Yes,
the Perrin's blade, Chance, is just touched by Opon.
Yeah.
And Lorne is the one with an Odeterral blade.
Yeah, I know my fucking Gardens of the Moon.
Josh, this guy's an expert.
Yeah.
Josh, you have any thoughts about the assassin duel, or are we moving on?
Move on. I've never had enough assassin duels in my life. Oh, we've got daggers. We can kick.
Yeah, stab you in the head.
We can kick. Alrighty. Chapter 19. Crocus is restless, fed up with all the people protecting him, and he wants to talk to Chalice after she informed on him. Crocus and Absalar slip onto the roofs, leaving the Phoenix Inn behind. The Tisty Andy Serrat has found Crocus once more. She tries to attack, but is caught by an invisible force. Ralak meets up with Murillo. Ralak is worried about the wounds he endured, but it seems as if he has recovered quickly. The last part of the plan to reinstate Cold is to duel Turban Orr. Murillo takes this task on himself, but not before speaking to the eel, who he thinks he has deduced the identity of. Across the city, Baruch, too, plans to pressure Circlebreaker into revealing the identity of the eel. Kruppa offers to reach out to the eel himself. Perrin, now with the Bridge Burners, is still confused about why Whiskey Jack wants to attack Darujistan. If Lassine will abandon them, why would One Arm's host attack the city? Whiskey Jack says they need to strengthen their position on Genabacus, for the Paninian Seer grows stronger in the south. Adjunct Lorne speaks of Otetarl and Perrin. The Jagged Tyrant will awaken in a few days. Onos Tulan will stand guard. Lorne heads to Darujistan with the Acorn Finist in hand. Crocus and Absalar cross the roofs of Darujistan to Kroll's Belfry, where they see the remnants of the dueling assassins. Absalar observes the moon and thinks of its gardens. Josh, you said you wanted to talk about the Crocus on the rooftops part. What's on your mind?
Well, number one, Crocus is fulfilling that stereotype of fucking idiot. That he has really been, he's had a couple moments in this book where it's been like, hey, yeah, like when he, like, used his words to not get killed by Lorne. But typically he's been doing dumb shit the whole time. So he leaves the safe place that's, like, super safe to go do some dumb stuff and talk to this girl. And what I want to...
India, do you agree?
No.
No?
I don't agree.
All right, Josh, finish your point.
Okay, well, what I want to talk about is we didn't even say it in here, right? But so, like, up until this point in the book, I feel like anytime something has happened that was unexplained, it was then explained shortly after, or enough clues were given to kind of help you out.
I disagree 100%.
Okay, well, I have felt that way while reading the book. And the exception is the Tisty Andy Serrat, who the Dramatis Personae labels as the second in command of the Tisty Andy. And I think even Animator Rake says that she could kill him if she wanted to. Anyway, she has two times been fucked up by an invisible force. And unlike other times, I have zero clue what that could be. Because every other time there's been some invisible shit going on, it's been the Tisty Andy. And I don't know why they would be interfering among their own. A. B. Crocus is definitely able to see some invisible shit, which is weird. He's got some ability to see that because he sees her flash for a second. And then he def sees three dragons leave the moon spawn.
I believe it was four.
Whatever fucking number. It's def don't be dragons. I believe it's five. Is it five?
So...
All right. Well, an indeterminate amount greater than one and less than a million number of dragons show up, and they're definitely leaving Moonspawn, and I have a lot of questions about that. A. Are dragons big? B. Do dragons breathe fire? C. Do dragons have four legs? What was I at? C. D.
You were actually did an AB, and then you did another ABC, so we're actually probably on, like, 0.7 of Josh's thing.
Okay, I got a lot of questions about dragons, and I'm very excited.
I didn't think they were dragons, I just thought that the Tisty Andy people could fly.
We have seen them levitate. It's either dragons or crows, and it's much more interesting if it's dragons, because they've hinted at dragons several times in the book.
Oh my god, it's dragons. A fantasy book with dragons! I didn't see that coming.
Yeah.
Listen to you.
Hey, Steven Erickson, you ever heard of a little guy called George R.R. Martin? Yeah.
Like, yeah.
If there's another motherfucker that can do dragons, it's my boy George.
I mean, a lot of people can do dragons.
Sure, yeah. I
but George got his on television, and they looked
George,
good.
George didn't invent dragons, Josh, so...
Yeah, but he made them dance, so...
What are we talking about?
Alrighty.
I don't know. I've never read the books. I'm a sham.
India, I guess before we kind of get towards the end of this chapter, I think this is a good chance to just ask, you know, you're talking about how nothing really happens in these three chapters.
Correct.
And well, so why do you feel that way? I would just love to know.
Well, honestly, Peter, if I have to say, this episode has just been us kind of like, haha, yeah. Like, you know, it's a lot of talking, but really, what are we talking about? There was a scene that was so inconvenient, we forgot to talk about it.
Mm. I mean, that's a strong point.
She got us there.
You know?
It's just, because you know what? You could say, like, in any book, you read any chapter, yeah, technically, because it's a book, a lot of things happened. But, like, when you really get down to the nitty-gritty, we could have done without this chapter. I was expecting some major things with the frickin' Jaghut Tyrant. I was expecting it to at least wake up. But we only...
But it's still sleeping. It's got, like, 2 days left to nap.
It's exhausted. And Lore slash the adjunct is just, like, in it for 5 seconds. And I was really... I don't know. Like, it just wasn't enough. And then her, and then the Talanai Mass, who's like, yeah, you just call me Tool now. And she's like, haha. Like, what was the point?
She's hanging out with Tool. What do you mean?
They're just, like, I don't know. I just thought I could do without this. I really could. I mean, I guess the main... and only important part of this book, not the whole book, but this.
Yeah.
It's really hard. That's a really hard thing to interchange. Was the whole scene with, like, Cole coming back to life. Also.
Yeah.
Did somebody poison him, by the way? Because there
no,
was, like.
His leg was infected.
Yeah, it was just got.
Oh, I think. Oh, yeah, but they said the thing about the herbs, right? Was that.
Yeah, like the healer tried to heal him using a bad method, apparently. So, like, it was hurting. It was doing more harm than
good. Okay. I was confused by that as well. Okay.
Sorry. Just, it was so insignificant. I forgot about it. Just thought I'd clear that up now.
So Josh, what'd you think? Do you agree? You concur? Not much happened. What'd you think?
In these three chapters, I actually felt like more has happened in these three chapters than in the past few.
Wow.
Even book five? Are you kidding?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I somewhat...
No, okay,
you know,
I'll pull that
one back.
Recant
that.
I don't think more happened. I don't think nothing happened. I think we learned a pretty good deal, honestly.
I think that this was a setup for the second book, is
oh,
what
it,
I think.
Well, it's a setup for book seven of this, for sure.
No,
I'll
no,
say, like,
I mean for
a
the
lot
second
of
book.
Pieces, I'll say this, if this was a chess match, we just did a lot of positioning and nothing actually got taken. You know what I mean?
I agree.
Yeah, like a chess match.
No, like, I totally agree. And I mean, like, I, you know, I don't really know what we're doing with the chess match thing. I guess I'm out of the loop. Like,
you know, Peter, like a chess match.
We're saying it like it's innuendo. I guess I'll Google it or something. I don't. Anyway, I am sympathetic to India's point. I think book five in the Gadrobi Hills is a really exciting section, and like characters collide, and I do think it's a great part of the book. But I do agree with Josh. There is a lot of positioning in this chapter, so to speak, and we do learn more about politics and stuff. So I do think it's coming down off of the high of kind of book five in a way, and definitely setting us up for kind of everything to kind of smash into place, and so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Very, what is the word? Like, you know, like, it's a very political answer. Right? You're both right. You both get a gold star.
I'm not...
I just want your true opinion, Peter. Can you just be real with
us? I'm just saying, yeah.
Listen,
I don't need your participation trophy, all right?
I want one of us to win, and I want to know who it is.
Yeah, tell me I'm a loser.
And with that spirit, before we have predictions, we might as well talk about it, since, you know, I read the passage up top. At the end of this chapter, Absalar kind of has a monologue that lends the title of the book its meaning. I really love the monologue. I kind of think it's beautiful, and I think it's really well written, and that's why I wanted to read on air. Any thoughts about it from the two of you?
Thought it was a little too intellectual for my taste.
I'm kidding.
It was well. Okay, here's my main thought. What the fuck is Sari talking about?
Yeah, Sari seems like she's off her rocker a little
Lapsalar. Yeah, that was some, like, still possessed by God shit. So
she's, you know, she's just dreaming of like a better place.
But she's,
you know,
saying
like
all those names. Does everyone know the names of these things on the moon? Because that seemed like some info the common man does not have.
Is it like a religion? I was just.
Also, is it significant that they're doing all this in Kroll's Belfry?
I don't know. What do you want? I just love the passage. She's just a world without war, Josh. She just wants to get up there and swim like dolphins. Yeah.
There's not water on the moon. It's made of cheese.
That's fair. Oh. Wait, Josh, did you get it though? Like,
that is correct. Yeah, I got it.
Okay, I didn't get that, which I think is actually funny because it's so obvious when somebody else says it. But I don't know.
I'm gonna look and see if they actually said the word gardens. If they didn't, then it's
I think
like,
they did.
They do say gardens.
They literally do. But like, I don't know. I was just like, meh. No, this is okay. It's all right, Absala.
And we'll live in those gardens. Yeah, that's a tough one to miss.
Yeah, I don't know. It was over my head. But, like, what is she, some kind of prophet?
Who's the Lord of the Deep Waters? Growlin. That seems important.
Alrighty, moving on to book seven. There's only book seven left, and all the shoes that are gonna drop are gonna drop,
stop.
You know?
What?
Peter, that wasn't a really...
Let me give another shot.
AJ, you better keep that shit.
We're coming up to the end, the climax of the book, and all the plot threads are going to kind of come together. I would love to hear some predictions before we kind of read the last section, and then you kind of know everything that happens. So, India, the Malazans, the Bridgeburners in Darujistan, what do you think's going to happen? The Jagat Tyrant's coming in. How do you think it all shakes out?
I think the Jagat Tyrant comes out, he's in Durjistan, he fucks shit up, some people make it, some people won't, we are on our way to Moonspawn, I think.
You think we're ending up on Moonspawn?
Yes. Or the
Josh,
other continent.
Seven cities.
Yeah, that's where we're going. We're going to one of those places, because we can't stay there. We don't gotta go home, but we gotta get the hell out of Durjistan.
Josh, what do you think?
Here's my hyper-specific called shot.
Okay.
I think that every Tisty Andy and Moonspawn dies or gets destroyed except Anamander Rake in a battle against the Jagat Tyrant.
Mm.
Fire.
And Anamander Rake is going to live and be even more sad as the last one of his kind, basically, besides the ones with Kaladin Brood.
What about Seraph?
Seret? That bitch better die.
Oh
Christ!
Wait,
strong Seraph.
Yeah, why? I thought she was pretty lit, but what? But
Seraph, you know? She's trying to kill Crocus, my boy.
Yeah, well, you know what, Crocus, he could use some growing up.
Agreed.
There you go. You heard it here first, Peter.
Yeah, hot takes. All right. Thanks for listening. Of course, 10 very big books on Twitter and Gmail. Reach out. Let us know what you think of the show. And for the next part, we're gonna be reading all of Book 7, The Fet. I believe that is how we're going to have to really settle on how to pronounce the word.
Is it French?
It is French.
It is fête.
I think it is.
It is. Isn't that the party?
Yes, like the party.
Yeah, it's fête.
The fête. So you can look for us then. I don't mean to speak for them, my co-host, but I'm very excited to talk about the end of the book with them.
You definitely don't mean to speak for me.
Alrighty. See you soon.
Hey everybody, producer AJ here again. Like every episode, I just want to extend the deepest gratitude for continuing to tune into the show. We've been getting emails and tweets from people who are enjoying the show, and there have been some really great discussions about the episodes on the Malazan Reddit page. That's reddit.com/r/Malazan. I encourage you to go check that out if you haven't already. We also, of course, want to thank Dan Gesrick for making our wonderful logo. You can follow him on Twitter @DanGesrick for the hottest pointers on the best way to play tug of war with your dog. And of course, all the music for the show comes from Amaranthin's album Simulant Rain, which you can find on bandcamp.com. Links to their pages will be in the show notes, and 10 Very Big Books will be back with their final recap episode of Gardens of the Moon in 2 weeks on August 1st. We hope to see you then. Thanks so much for listening.